Culture Clash on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to our brand new show on FUBAR Radio. It's Culture Clash with me, Juggy.
And me, Tanvi.
So this show is Culture Clash, is where we take a look at the melting pot of British society and the culture clashes that can arise. So we aim to have fun and honest chats about being young and British Asian whilst also holding on to our cultural values and beliefs. So each week we're going to have a different theme and topic. So Tanvi, unveil the topic and theme for this week.
This week the topic is dating, and I can't wait to get into it because, like, we've all been there, we've all had horror stories, we all love talking about dating, giving our tips. We're going to be getting into agony aunt questions that you want to know, and I'm just so excited because it's juicy.
Yeah, we talk about dating all the time between us, so this is going to be fun to do it on air. So coming up on the show, we'll be looking at stories that have made the news. We'll be joined by Annabelle Knight, who's a relationship expert. We're going to be having to take
we'll
take notes for that. And Love Island's Cynthia Tawo from the winter Love Island season will be talking about modern dating and the struggles that come with that. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, who better to speak to about dating than a Love Islander?
Exactly, exactly. Now, a little bit about us as your hosts of the show. I'm Juggy, so I am British Asian, British born, Punjabi. I'm of Sikh faith. I'm 5'11" on dating profiles, 5'10" in person.
That basically means 5'8".
Yeah. I've got brown eyes. I feel like it is like the Hinge stats. You know the
foot that you have to put on. You've got to add 2 inches on,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, you know how it is.
Right. To the height.
But I'm not 5'8", just disclaimer, all right? I'm not 5'8". But yeah, so I'm a presenter and I'm a film producer, director and writer. So really excited to be on here and talk with you, Tanvi, about everything. But yeah, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I'm Tanvi. I'm also Indian, but unlike Juggy, I am Gujarati, which is another state in India, and there's so many different varieties of Indians. I was also born and raised in the UK, and I actually used to work in banking and finance, so I'm a chartered accountant, which I know I don't look and seem like your typical boring accountant, but I used to do that. But I actually quit my job last year, so now I am a content creator and a presenter, so that is why you're listening to me here on FUBAR Radio.
But this is good because it's got that different perspective, right? You've got that finance side, and then you've got you do fashion as well, don't you?
So
you
talk about that. Just feel like women can do it all. Like, just because you work a corporate job doesn't mean you can't play sports or be fashionable or just have loads of these different elements to you. So that's what I'm all about.
No, 100%, right? So everyone's talking about this niching thing. They're like, oh, because you're a presenter, but then you're a director as well. I'm like, you can do both.
Put me into a box.
Yeah, 100%. Right, so a little bit get to know. I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions. Just to, you know, get, you know, under your skin a little bit.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So we're going out to celebrate the show. We're going out to eat. Where are we going and what are you ordering for the table?
I love pizza.
Okay.
I think I'm going to have to go to Pizza Express.
Nice.
Is that really basic of me? I don't know.
I mean, look, I was hoping for something a bit more,
Pizza Express,
but like, it's fine.
Pizza Express is like my childhood thing, okay? Yeah. I haven't grown out of it yet. And I'm going to get, I'm vegetarian.
Okay.
Don't judge me for it.
No, it's fine.
But I would probably just get like a margarita and the supersized dough balls. You know, you can get like normal dough balls and you get the supersized. That's what I'm getting.
Okay. And who was your childhood crush? Take us back.
Who
was on the poster on the wall?
Do you know what? It's probably someone like Neo.
Neo.
Usher.
Okay.
Neo. That kind of vibe.
I like it. The R&B to early 2000s vibe.
Yeah,
like
that was
it.
What I had on my wall.
I like it. What you got for me?
Okay, if you could visit one country in the world, where would it be?
Japan. Okay. I want to do the Mario Karts.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. You can ride around in actual real life Mario Karts on the street.
Yeah, I want to do that. Like, it looks so cool. And obviously I like Japanese food and just the culture. I think it'd be amazing to go there. So yeah, that's where I'd go, yeah.
Okay, and how else are we going to get to know you? Let's talk about a dating question, okay?
Okay.
If you had to pick one quality that is a non-negotiable in a person that you were looking to marry, what would it be?
Go
straight to marriage.
I would say just sense of humour. I'm quite like young at heart. I like that kind of, you know, you just got to have that humour. You've got to be able to laugh, right?
Yeah, I think laughing is the way to be with someone for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But there just aren't that many funny people out there.
But right, okay, let's get down to the news segment. So each week we're going to be picking a story that's, you know, going on in the world that we want to kind of dissect and offer kind of our South Asian perspective, because you don't really get that in mainstream. So We Love Island is back. back. We've got Cynthia coming on shortly as well. So let's talk Love Island. Now, Love Island comes with its own stigma for our community. Now, one of the things I want to ask is, why don't South Asians go on there? Like, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, throughout all the seasons of Love Island, there's probably been, like, a handful of South Asians that have actually made it onto the show. I'm sure more apply, but it's probably the minority. I think for South Asians, it's so scary to put themselves out there on reality television because we get judged by our own community for everything, and we're exposed to hate already because we are an ethnic minority from the general public. But more than anything, if we were to slip up or do something a bit controversial or something that's not so traditional, I think especially for women, you'll get dragged. You will literally get dragged on the internet. We've seen it before when Shannon went on previously. She got awful hate from the South Asian community, and it's so sad because as a community, we should be supporting
one another. Do you think we are too conservative? Like, you know, like, because on Love Island, you know, I was explaining to my mum and dad how it all works. They were just intrigued. And I was like, okay, so you have to go to bed with a partner on there. You have to, you know, you do, they generally wear...
Yeah, you're in bikinis the whole day.
You're in bikinis and trunks and, you know, you do kissing challenges. It is very kind of promiscuous show. And our community is quite taboo like that. Do you think that needs to change in general?
Absolutely. I think whilst we have made progress, like, I do think we still just hold our members of our community to such a high standard. Like, we're not allowed to make mistakes, we're not allowed to be progressive, and like, it's the 21st century. Like, we believe in gender equality, we should be able to have the same opportunities and do the same thing as like white counterparts. So definitely we need to change, and also we just need to be empowering one another. Like, how are we as a society gonna get the opportunities we deserve and just move forward if we're not allowing our own to have those same opportunities without dragging them on the internet?
100%. And also, we're British born. We're here. We've grown up with the same kind of, you know, atmosphere, environment as everyone else. We're capable of them stuff. It's just, you know, I think it's more fear of our own community and what they're going
to
say.
Judgment, I think. I mean, growing up, I think, as Indians, you can probably relate to this, but like, before doing anything, before making any decisions, before going out, your parents always drill it into your head, like, what would people say?
Yeah.
Like, about anything.
Yeah.
Like, who you choose to marry, what job you choose to have. It's all about, like, what the community would say. And you're constantly worried about what people think. I mean, I put that out the window because of my career as, like, a social media content creator.
It's good that your parents are open and, you know...
But I'm definitely the minority, right? I know so many of my friends that still have to worry about what their parents think. And so, like, doing reality TV is completely out of the question.
Yeah, no, 100%. It is for a lot. But on Love Island, now, generally, people of colour don't do too well. It's traditional. They only put one or two kind of people in there, and they never do well. And what do you think that tells us about society in general and the whole kind of colourism debate? And, you know, why don't we do well in there? Do you think it's because they're not putting the right people that actually are attracted to, you know, people of colour? Or what's your opinion on that?
I hate to say it, but I think there is just a prejudice and an unconscious bias with society where, you know, the Eurocentric beauty standard is blonde hair, blue eyes. That is so common on Love Island that, like, that's the girl that gets the most attention and all the men like. And the black or brown girls are often, like, pushed to the side. It exists during the show, but also after. Like, I've read so many articles about it where the opportunities the women of colour get after are so much lower.
They have to work a lot harder.
Yeah, they have to work a lot harder, even if they've been on it the whole season versus someone who's been on it like a week. If they're white, they often get way more opportunities, but also the income. I've heard the amount of pay, like, for a brand campaign, if you are white and you are the most marketable, blonde hair, blue eyes, tan skin, versus if you're maybe a black woman or a brown woman, your income is literally half just because brands don't place a higher value on you. And that's sad, and that needs to change.
Crazy when you think about it, right? And I think we were talking about Sanam just before off air. She's the Winter Love Island winner.
Yeah,
she came across really well. But also, she wasn't that controversial. I think that's why, one of the things, you know, do we only accept South Asians or black people to win if they're quite, you know, reserved? Mm-hmm. And is that, you know, if you've got a bit of a personality, is that seen as a flaw?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably something to say in general with Love Island. Obviously, the show is heavily produced.
Yeah.
And I feel like people who aren't outspoken and going to cause trouble is probably what the producers prefer anyway, because they're able to kind of shape them into the character they want them to play on the show. I mean, it's not news that it's not scripted, obviously, but it is, like, influenced by the producers' decisions. So I think as long as they're not causing trouble, yeah, sure, person of colour, absolutely do your thing.
But another thing is, on Love Island, as we're just Love Island-centric today. Now, on this series, the public got to vote who got together, and it was quite segregated. The white people got put together, the two black contestants got put together, and that's a recurring theme.
Yeah, it's happened before.
And it's just, what is that like? Again, what is that telling us about society? Are we not open to mixed race? Are we, you know, what is that about every kind of community as well? What is that saying?
It's interesting that that's happened, because I always see mixed race people around. Like, I always see mixed couples, and I love it, and I think we need to normalise it. But I also think there's, again, like, the subtle unconscious bias where people put people together that look like each other because they think they suit. And actually, maybe on paper or personality-wise or, like, intellectually, they're completely different. It, like, they, just because they look good together. So, again, I think that's, like, that unconscious bias we need to challenge.
But also, as a community, like, I would just naturally gravitate to probably a South Asian as well. Like, we don't... For ourselves as well, we kind of stick to what we know, right? Mm-hmm. We don't, it's hard to get out of your comfort zone, isn't it?
Yeah, and also from a culture perspective, you would automatically have more in common with a South Asian. There might be nuances, jokes, the food, like the weddings, all of that. You automatically click. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you won't get on with someone that's not South Asian. I just think, yeah, these are the biases that we need to talk about all the time so that we're actively not swaying towards that preference or what we're used to, and actually branching out.
Yeah, I like that saying of normalising it, just making it, you know, testing the water.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a taboo to, like, marry outside your race, marry outside your culture, but I think we're still working in that as a society.
Yeah, but then also the communities want a route for their own as well. Yeah, they do, like, you know, they do want them to get together, especially on Twitter. It's like, Love Island on Twitter is like its own show on itself.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter's toxic. I stay away from it because it terrifies me, but you can watch the whole of Love Island just on Twitter from the memes.
That's what I've been doing. I'm not gonna lie. And like diversity on there. Now, there's been a big calling for diversity on Love Island, and I think there should be. And there's still, you know, where are the dad bods at? Where are the hairy guys at?
Like, yeah. Oh my god. I think Love Island is such a, in the sense, it's superficial because obviously people go on there because they look good. They're happy to be on reality TV, and a lot of it is about like what you look like on the outside. But actually, there needs to be diversity, not just from like people that are just normal everyday people that don't look like supermodels, which most of the people on there do, but also just like from a race perspective, from an LGBTQ plus perspective, from a disability perspective. There just needs to be like more diversity as a whole on the show, and I don't think it's something that would happen overnight, but I would have thought at this point and this many seasons that we would see more variety. And like, it just,
you don't see curves on there, you don't see curves on there, you don't see anything. It's just like, that's not a good representation of the general public as well. And it's a bit, because then obviously like beauty standards, you look at someone like that, you know, as a guy you look at a guy in a six pack, or as a girl you look a girl in a kind of, you know, amazing figure, and you're like, okay, should I, that's not good for like...
It's so damaging because obviously that can really impact people's mental health. But also at the same time, I think it's a catch-22, because if you're not seeing people that look like you on it, you're not going to apply, are you? So
yeah, exactly, exactly. Now, we're talking about Love Island. So we actually have our first guest, which I'm really, really excited about. We've got Cynthia Tawo. Now, she was in the Winter Love Island. She was a Casamore contestant. And we've got her here. So Cynthia... How are you doing?
How are you?
Yeah, all good. How's everything going?
Good, really good.
Oh, good. Like, timely we got you on, because it's all Love Island centric. We're talking about dating, and who better? Someone that's been in there, done that. So,
yeah.
So first of all, just what made you want to go on Love Island?
Well, I mean, I'm going to be 26, and my younger brother, who's literally turned 20 today, has been in a long-term relationship for about 3 years. So it's a little bit embarrassing when you're, you know, turning 26 and you still have no serious boyfriend at all whatsoever. My older brother is 31 now, and he's been in this relationship for about 7 years. So I'm the only single person in my family.
Which isn't a bad thing. It's not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing, but it's like also like, you know, when you see your brothers are in love, and it's like, usually it's the boys that take the longest to fall in love. So what the hell is going on here? So I think it was that as well. I also just love the idea of love. And I think I miss that feeling of being in love as well. And it's such a strong and passionate emotion. So you'd want to share that with someone else, right? So I definitely went on there to have a boyfriend at the end of it.
Okay, so you went on for the right reasons. You were like, okay, yes. No, you know what, I actually want... But did you get any kind of backlash from your own kind of family or any reservations about going on? Because we were talking about it just now, you know, people of colour, contestants of colour don't tend to do that well on a show like that. So what was...
Well, I mean, my mum is a very devoted Christian. So the fact that I was going to go on TV and have my bum out and my boobs out, I think that for her was a bit stressful. But to be honest, she was actually really, really good. I think as much as she is a devoted Christian, I think she's also very aware that we live in a time where everything is very modern now. It's not how it was however many years ago anymore. So it's kind of like... you need to relax a little bit. You can't be as strict, because if you are as strict, my kid's going to do it anyway. I think she's kind of gotten into that now.
Okay. And you mentioned your mum's of Christian faith. Now, obviously, this being, we're a show called Culture Clash. We're, me and Tanvi are both Indian, but we're from different kind of regions in India, and we're of different faiths. Like, do you go by a faith? Like, what kind of ethnicity? Could you tell us a little bit more about your background in terms of that side of things?
I mean, I'm Nigerian, so my heritage is I'm Nigerian.
Yeah.
I'd say with a lot of African cultures, it can be quite strict. I think especially when it came to like going to school as well. So like going to school, you'd have to make sure that you're doing the subjects where you can get a really, really good job. And I remember when I told my mum that I was going to go to university to study music, and her face kind of went, what? She was like, are you joking? Like, where on earth could you go with this? And I told her all the things that you could go into with it. And I think that surprised her, because I don't think she was aware that there is actually so many jobs you can go into with music. And I think it comes down to the same thing as well with dating. I think African cultures, I find that they want you to date another African man who is, you know, he's got a very good job, you know, you want them to be the wife that they come home to, that you cook the dinners for, like, do you know what I mean, that sort of thing. And again, I think my mum's kind of realized now that we're living in very modern times, and it's not what it used to be like at all. And I mean, I don't really have a type when it comes to men. Like, I'm not really specific when it comes to, oh, black, white, whatever, you know, I don't really care. I think at the end of the day, love is love, and whoever you fall in love with you're blessed enough to have that feeling, you know? But yeah, no, I think when it comes to African cultures, it can be a little bit strict. I'm just very lucky with my mum. I'd say I'm very lucky with my mum.
Now, that's why we've done a show like this, right? We call it Culture Clash, because it's interesting to find out, you know, from different cultures, how, because I think Indian culture and African culture are quite similar in terms of everything you mentioned. I done English at university, and my parents are like, what are you going to do with that? And I was like, there's this, there's that. And then even the whole dating thing, right? You're kind of expected to go with your own culture. So it's really interesting to hear your perspective. But let's go back to Love Island. What was the experience like for you on there?
Do you know what's so interesting? Everyone sort of kind of asks me that question. And I know some women ask me that question as well, in the sense of, oh, because I'm black, right? I'm a darker skin tone. What is it like being a black woman on that show? Mm. And if I'm honest, I had a great time. Like, I had a really, really good time. I think
I was very immersed
in the experience. Like, when they said to me, okay, we're going to take your phone, I was like, take it now. I don't want to. Like, I was very ready to not have my phone. I was very ready to just enjoy living in that moment. So obviously it was a shame that it got cut short, but I was so immersed in that experience that I had a great time. And obviously, I think everyone knows my storyline as well. So even I was surprised, to be quite honest with you. I was very, very surprised, because I think you do go onto that show worried if someone will be attracted to you. Yeah. And I think it is, I think I was seeing the statistics. The UK is 82% Caucasian, I think that is.
That's crazy.
And I think obviously... That's a high.
That's a high. I didn't realize that.
It's a lot of people. So obviously, when you go onto a show that is predominantly Caucasian, like, let's be real, it is predominantly Caucasian. You're going on a show that is like that. Even thinking that and being, oh, okay, is this man going to be attracted to me? Not just because of my skin, but just me, right? You have to think about it like that. And obviously, again, Love Island is a very looks-based show. Let's be real. It's a looks-based show. Yeah. It goes based on looks, and then the connection comes afterwards. So I was worried, oh my gosh, is someone actually going to find me attractive? Because I am a black woman, realistically. So, and it's a very predominantly Caucasian show. And I was very surprised. I was pleasantly surprised with my experience, and I was very happy with it. So I had a great time. Obviously, it is different for everyone. You do get people that don't have storylines, so they don't get any airtime. And that is a shame, because you do want to show everything, but there is so much that goes on during that show, during one night that you guys, like, there's only an hour that you guys are actually shown.
Yeah.
I was even surprised that both of my kisses made it to air because there was so much more.
Listen, go get your airtime, all right? I like
kisses.
It.
No, they must have been good kisses. That's what I
mean. Oh, girl, they were good kisses. I won't toot his horn too much, but, you know, I was very surprised because there was so much more that was going on in that evening alone, and on the other side as well, in the other villa. So it's like the fact that both of my kisses got aired, I was like, get in.
I like the fact that you went on there and you were open-minded and you kind of showcased for all kind of people of colour that, you know, you had a great experience. The fact that you come away saying that, hopefully that opened doors for more people of colour to kind of go on the show going, actually, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, go ahead.
This season is ridiculously diverse. I am so chuffed at it. Like, it's so diverse. I am, like, blown away by it.
But it's also because, like Jaggy said, women like you have gone on and had a good experience, and that then will encourage more to keep applying, which is exactly what we need. And today's episode is literally all about dating. You've already shared your experience, you know, on the show itself. But, like, now you've left the villa, okay? Your life must have changed. Obviously, there's a lot that's happened since, and we want to know, like, what is going on with you now? What is your dating life like right now?
It's so weird. It's really, really weird because it's like, I'm on Hinge. I don't care. I'll own it. I'm on Hinge. I want a boyfriend, simple as. But it's like, I think when we get to that point where they're like, oh, can I have your Instagram? And I'm like, I kind of hesitate a little bit because it's like, I'm verified. I've got however many thousands of followers. Then I've kind of got to break it to them that I was on Love Island. Is that going to be an ick for them? I don't know. But either way, if it is an ick for you, then you're not the person for me. Regardless.
What has the reaction been to that, though? What has the reaction been to when you tell them you're on Love Island? Has it been, like, quite positive or?
It's kind of like, it was like, oh my gosh, no way. Like, I don't watch it, but that's great.
But then don't you think half the time, half the time they definitely know exactly who you are and they're just trying to stunt, like pretend they don't.
Do you know what? I had a really, really weird experience. So there was this one guy, we matched, and then he was like, your face looks familiar. And I was thinking,
here we go.
Please don't say. And then he sent me a voice note and it was like, oh my gosh, like, you're Cynthia from Love Island. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then he started kind of fangirling a little bit.
Red flag, straight red flag.
Also, this is what really put me off is that he's also friends with Casey. So I was like, yeah, no.
That's weird.
Like, absolutely not.
Fine.
Like, no.
Well, you've said you're on Hinge and obviously you are meeting people that aren't Love Islands or anything of the sort. But have you had, like, anyone famous, any blue ticks in those DMs since you've been on? Like, give us the goss.
Oh, do you know what? I feel like I'm not famous enough to have that many blue ticks. The only blue ticks that are in my DMs is, like, my friends. Literally, that's it.
Like, that's a flex.
That's literally it. That's the only thing. I genuinely don't have, like, any other blue ticks that are, like, flirty or anything with me. I think, do you know what I've noticed is on Instagram, you have to reach a certain amount of following to have recognition from other blue ticks, if that makes sense.
Mm.
So, like, I feel like if you're, like, 40K upwards, then you kind of have the following of, like, other blue ticks. It's interesting.
This Instagram, like, DM life is crazy, isn't it?
I just think it's mad that, like, someone's following or, like, the number of followers on someone's page can, like, dictate their value, which is so silly because obviously you're a beautiful person inside and out, and just because you haven't got blue ticks in there right now doesn't mean you won't in the future. But but also, like, what are you actually looking for in a guy? Like, you are actively dating, you said you want to find someone, you want a boyfriend. Like, what are the non-negotiables in a person?
Non-negotiable is you need to be hardworking as ever, just purely because I have my own business as well, so I need you to understand there may be a few hours where I won't be able to respond to you because what I do is I'm baking. So that takes a lot of my time, but that's hours of work. Do you know what I mean? That's not, okay, stop and text here and there. Like, I need you to understand that I'm not always going to be able to text you, and then vice versa. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So I can understand that. But then I want us to be able to have good communication at the end of the day. When we're done at the end of the day, it's not, oh, I'm tired, I'll text her tomorrow. It's, oh no, how has your day been? That sort of thing. Family orientated. I really want someone that's family orientated because like me and my brothers are super duper close. So I'd need someone that's also the same. I mentioned good communication. Isn't afraid to just have fun. Like life is so serious, like all the time, right? There are so many instances where life is so serious. And I just want someone to be able to just relax and not take life too seriously. Be serious in the serious moments and just have fun when you're not in the serious moments.
I don't think you're asking for too much at all. And well, honestly, I hope you find him. I mean, you sound like a hustler and I feel like I can relate to so much of what you said. Like, I love to work and finding someone who actually gets it and isn't emasculated by like a female hustler is so important, but so rare. But they do exist. I promise you, they do exist.
Well, point them out to me.
I'll let you know. I'll be your wingwoman. Don't worry.
But Cynthia, also tell us about your business. So cake business, your baker?
Yes.
Yes. Tell us a little bit more.
I am a baker. So my business is called Sinful Treats.
Love
so
it.
Obviously, like Cynthia, Sin City, obviously having a cake is sort of like an indulgence that you shouldn't have.
But I like that name. Strong time, name.
So, you know, we can enjoy it. And my business is my baby, literally. It has been going since, I'd say I started it up, like the idea of it in 2019, but it was never something that I really took seriously until about like May last year. And it just so happened to be that like it was mentioned through Love Island, and then obviously it's like kind of grown through there. But my business is my baby. I make cakes, cupcakes, cookies. I want to introduce brownies to the menu soon as well. This weekend has been a very busy weekend for me. I've literally got about 5 cakes and 48 cupcakes
to
make.
don't hesitate to throw a few more in there and send them our way.
Listen, you're our first guest, Cynthia, right, for the Culture Clash show. So listen, we want to know what flavour you'd make for us two in the studio for your baking. By the end of your time here, I want to know what kind of, what cupcake or what, you know, flavour you'd make us, right, for our show.
I kind of already know.
Oh, okay, go on then.
So I'd either give you guys either white chocolate and raspberry.
Okay. Okay.
Or white chocolate and pistachio.
Oh, I like the sound of that
one. Yeah, I like that one. Yeah. Okay, that's a winner.
Yeah, I thought so. Pistachio. So with the pistachio, it's a vanilla flavored cookie, white chocolate chips, and it's got pistachios inside the cookie. And then I've made like a pistachio sort of kind of like paste, like spread sort of thing goes inside the cookie. So when you break open the cookie, you've got like this pistachio cream sort of thing.
Look, you're speaking to someone that never steps foot in a kitchen. So you could have given me like a milk chocolate cookie and I would have been happy. But that sounds delightful.
Listen, you've got the dating criteria there. You bake. That's a selling
point.
That's
a wifey material.
Do you know what? The typical line, and if any guys are on Hinge that match with me, like, just please listen. I don't need a taste tester, okay? I don't need one. I do not need one. That is the go-to line for guys. I'm like, oh, God, here we go again.
Now, Cynthia, you've said you're a boss woman. You're owning kind of that and you've got that side of you. But, you know, back in the day of generations of our parents, you know, there was like kind of that, you know, women stay at home, men are the providers. Yeah. How do you feel like dating's changed since then? Like, you know, now it's a modern day world, but are we kind of there yet?
I feel like it's kind of like switched, if I'm honest, to a little bit. I find that more and more men want to kind of spend more time with their children and, you know, be probably a stay-at-home dad whilst sometimes the woman is the breadwinner. I'm not saying that this is like, you know, a large factor of people, but I've seen it like here and there, you know. But I also still feel like there is still a little bit of an expectation for women to be in the kitchen and, you know, have the babies and stay at home.
That's why I purposely don't. I'm making a point.
Like, literally, if I'm not in the kitchen cooking with my mum, she's like, how do you expect to have a husband that will love you because you don't cook?
My dad says the same thing.
But they're in that generation, right? Yeah. They don't know. They've just grown up with what they know, right? So they're passing that down on us. It's up to us to kind of change it. But then even us treading that ground, it's hard. It's hard to know as a guy. It's hard to know when to be the gentleman, I suppose, and when to kind of do, you know, open the doors or pay for the first date, which we're talking about later, and stuff like that.
My answer to this is, just marry a chef. So you don't need to be in the kitchen.
Right, noted.
But yeah, Cynthia, now you mentioned African culture before. Now, do you, because in Indian culture, we have a caste system, don't we, Tanvi?
Yeah.
So is there like a caste system? And what that means is basically in India, we have a different caste system of what people done back in India in terms of their jobs that ranks like higher and lower.
It's almost like a hierarchy based on what people were known for. And it also goes hand in hand with this idea of colorism. You mentioned that you're a dark skin black girl, and even in Indian culture, and I know that this is similar in African culture, like if you're more fair skinned, you're seen as more beautiful. So again, do you think the caste system, the colorism, does that exist 100%. In African culture, and does it affect your dating life?
I'd say I don't know if it would be more so in African culture, but I do see it in British culture.
Okay.
There are phrases, there are multiple like different phrases in to describe a black woman. So like I would be classified as like a dark skinned black woman, and then you have a brown skinned black woman. So okay. That would be slightly lighter than me, probably. And then you have the light skinned black woman. It's so strange.
It's crazy really that we're judged way. For like the shade of our skin. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's so strange. And what I found, especially in school, was the girls that had the really like curly hair, that were, you know, of the lighter sort of darker skin tone, were the girls that were, I guess, seen as more beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then it only changed a few years ago where it was like, oh my gosh, no, like dark-skinned black women are actually really beautiful, and they do also have curly hair. It may not be as loose as the other girls' curly hair, but it's super coily, and that's still curly. So I think it is starting to change. It is definitely starting to change, but it was definitely a thing, 100%.
Mm. I think also it's like trends, like beauty trends. Obviously, yeah. There's like this ideal Eurocentric beauty standard, which I think is absolute BS and needs to go out the window. But like the Kardashians, like normalized like lip fillers, which are actually more traditional to African women, or like having a bit of big butt. Like that's also more traditional, maybe with like South American cultures. And even now, like I can relate, fluffy eyebrows, like oiling your hair, all of these things are now trends because white people do it. That was like part of Indian culture for centuries. Yeah. So I think it's a shame that it's only become beautiful because other people have made it beautiful. But at the same time, I completely agree. Black women are beautiful, and they need to be appreciated for who they are.
But the whole colorism thing, it goes back to, you know, when it goes back to our own communities, I think. You know, when Prince Harry and Meghan were on Oprah, and they made that comment about Archie's skin color, and they said, someone said that in our own communities, that's a common thing to talk about. It wasn't a shock. You know, you go, oh, are they going to go after the boy side or the girl side, and whoever's lighter, they prefer it, right?
Yeah, and also they have things like this. I don't know if you know about this, but there's this cream called Fair and Lovely.
Oh, no,
and it's been cancelled in the UK, but it's basically like the skin whitening cream that apparently will make you more beautiful. And it's just sad because obviously younger girls who are darker skin toned, and I'm sure you can probably relate to this, like growing up you felt less beautiful because you weren't lighter, which is so sad.
And this is why I'm quite careful when I call myself an influencer, because what am I actually influencing? And I feel like a lot of the influencers need to look at themselves in the mirror as well with that, in the sense of, what are you actually influencing? Like, you have hundreds of thousands of followers. How many of these, like those people percentage wise, are female, and age range wise, how old are they? Mm-hmm. And also just remember, if you call yourself an influencer, what are you influencing? If you're holding up an ad picture that is, oh, you know, these fat burning pills, and a 13-year-old girl goes and buys them, and something bad happens, like, again, what are you influencing? And I think that goes back to like the whole era of the BBLs.
Yeah.
Now that it's kind of going, if I'm honest, it's kind of slowly making its way out. Everyone kind of wants to be a gym girl, you know. Everyone wants that gym vibe, that the girls that are muscular and strong and toned, and which is good, which is what you want. This is, you know, you want people to take care of them, help their health and move their body. But I definitely think, again, as an influencer, you need to be careful as to what you're influencing. And it goes the same for like your Kim Kardashians and your Kylie Jenners, you know?
Yeah, no, I think it's so important to be responsible with your platform. Yeah. And if you have a big platform, use it to raise awareness for the right things.
Yeah.
And you sound 100%. Like you're doing exactly that. So what is kind of next for you? Like, in terms of I guess your platform, what are you now looking forward to doing, and ultimately dating life, when are you looking to settle down?
Well, if I'm honest, I want to build an empire for myself. I think I have that entrepreneur mind. Like, I can't not run a business. Like, I have to. Like, it's just,
it's always on the go, right? Everything's on the go all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
I just can't see myself doing anything else other than running a business. Like, I just can't see it. So, I definitely want to continue to grow my business. Of course, that takes time, especially when it's baking, because there are a lot of bakers out there that are very, very talented, and you know that it is a stiff competition. So it's kind of, you have to be, I guess, based on your area, you have to hit your right target, your target market. And then I want to hopefully one day have a shop. I'm manifesting that. I'm putting that into the universe.
We're doing it for you.
Manifesting it for you.
There you go.
I want a simple treat shop, and I just want it to be, you know, I want it to be a place where people can go and, you know, be like, oh, I can't resist that vanilla raspberry cupcake. I need that pistachio cookie. Do you know what I mean?
So listen, we need that. We need that in the studio, right? So send it our way. Right, so Cynthia, look, thank you so much for sharing your perspective and telling us a bit about you and the culture and just how that affects the dating scene and your experience on Love Island. It's been really interesting. But just before you go, I've got some quick fire dating questions for you.
Oh, no.
Just because we're going to get into our next segment in a minute. So just nice archway. What is your first date tip? Like, for a guy?
Make sure to compliment them.
Okay. Do people not do that?
No, they do not. No. And I know, I've been looking 10 out of 10 and they've not even said one thing. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, that's okay. A good tip.
That's baffling. Because, wow. Okay, and then who should pay for a first date?
If it depends on who's asked for the date. If the guy has asked for the date, then he should pay. If the girl has asked for the date, then maybe see if you can do 50-50. If not, you're asking him for his time, so you kind of need to pay.
Amen.
Fair enough.
I agree.
Fair enough. Oh, we're getting into this. We're getting into this. I think a guy should pay. I'm not going to lie. Like, listen. Okay, look, Cynthia, thank you so much. Can you give us, where's your Instagram handles? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram, CynthiaTaiwo_, and then you can find Sinful Treats as SinfulTreats_ as well on Instagram.
Thank you. And we're looking forward to that cookie delivery, right?
We're holding you to that.
Send me the address.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. And thanks for your insight all about dating.
Thank you
for having me, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
That was the lovely Cynthia Taiwo from Winter Love Island. That was really interesting.
I love that. Like, if anything, I've learned that Indian and African culture are so similar. Like, there's so many overlaps, especially when it comes to dating. Like, all of the things she said, I could totally relate to.
But yeah, so we've got our next segment coming up. So Tanvi, take us away. What are we doing next?
Our next segment is something called Versus. I absolutely love it. And this segment is all about a certain question that we pick, and it relates to the topic, which is of course dating, and we'll give our own opinions, Juggy and I, but obviously we are no experts in the field, so we are also getting an expert on to give us their top tips and their advice to the question. Okay, so as we've already mentioned, this is dating, and the question of today's show is, who should pay on the first date? And I know you were ready to get into it, so I want to hear your answer first.
Okay, so I've been brought up with, you know, the general stereotype that, you know, men should provide for women. And I'm not all about equality and everyone having their time in the relationship. But I do still believe in, you know, being a gentleman. And I genuinely like asking, being the first one to ask. And because I think girls like that as well. I think deep down, the girls do want to be romanced, and they do want to kind of have the guy kind of take the lead initially, you know, make that, you know, everyone wants to feel wanted, right?
Yeah.
And a guy wants to kind of, and for the guy, we all like a chase. So having that, asking someone the question, do you want to go on a date? That gives the guy a buzz. That gives the girl a buzz. Like, I don't see, there's nothing like untoward about that. There's nothing, you know, the guy's a narcissist or this. It's just like,
it does get to that point.
Yeah, so it's like, actually, like, you know, maybe a guy just, I like planning the first date. So I like getting to know a person, going, okay, what do you see? Should we go for a coffee or drink? And it's just quite casual.
Yeah.
But I think if I generally want to ask for the first date, generally it's quite receptive or they just blank me for ages.
just goes.
And then, but then generally it's quite receptive. And then if I ask, and then I do want to pay. And I don't think, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think that doesn't mean I'm not a feminist or I'm not about equality. I just think I want to treat the person. And I think generally, I think, you know, everyone's got their roles. And I think, like, I think initially a girl does, like, from my opinion, from when I kind of spoke to, like, I've been dating a lot recently, and it's kind of, you know, when they do talk about that, you know, the girl does say eventually, you know, I did want to be asked. I'm really glad you asked. Like, I go in straight with a voice note as well.
Oh, I'm like, just break the ice.
I'm like, I can't, you know, this whole back
and forth. I think that's actually quite nice, so that, like, they can get an idea of your personality rather than just, like, a boring DM. Yeah. That's quite a good tip out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to say, I think I used to agree with what you've just said, and, like, I wanted to be romanticised and, like, live in my feminine energy era. But at the same time, I feel like chivalry is dead, and so many men aren't, like, romantic and want to take care of their women. So I think I kind of got used to the idea of actually, like, women have to pay and split equal. But also, I do, like, I'm a strong feminist and I believe in gender equality. So I don't think there should be this expectation of men to always pay, especially if I've asked someone out, like Cynthia said, like, if I've asked someone out, I respect their time. I should also be obliged to split that bill or pay my part as well. Like, I think gender equality exists, and I think it should be an equal split.
So we're obviously divided on this.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, you know, receptive to each other's points. So right now it's a perfect time to bring on our next guest, relationship expert and couples coach, Annabelle Knight. Hello.
Oh, hello, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. How are you doing, Annabelle? Are you okay?
Oh, do you know what? I've been better. I had the morning from hell, which is why I'm slightly late in joining you guys. But it's all in the past now and behind me.
Listen, we've got our notepads and I've literally got my pen ready, right? We're ready for the tips. We're ready for the...
Need all the advice we can get.
So on this topic, obviously, we're talking about who dating in general, but then who should pay on the first date. What is your opinion on that?
Well, do you know what? I think it is entirely dependent on the two people on the date. As long as post-date, you're both happy and comfortable with what happened, how you split it, how you approach that as well. That's the important thing. And it's also about, you know, when you're on first dates and you're first deciding, you know, who pays and why, that's actually a great opportunity to get to know someone's values and their approach and their beliefs. And through that, you can then ascertain whether or not they're a good match for you. Because, for example, if I invite someone out on a date, I would wholly expect to contribute, if not pay, because it was they are going out, they are leaving the house, they are making an effort at my invitation. I know lots of women don't feel that way. And if they suggest a date, they would be absolutely horrified if their date suggested splitting the bill. So it is all about your individual and independent values.
I think as well, what's an important topic to touch upon is obviously at the moment we're living in a cost of living crisis and people have different circumstances and situations. What kind of advice would you give if someone is maybe struggling financially but is also single and looking to date, but they obviously can't afford to constantly be taking people out and paying for the bill? What would you advise those sorts of people?
Yeah, I would definitely say that if this is something that is affecting you, I think the cost of living crisis affects pretty much everyone at the moment.
Yes.
Re-evaluate what your idea of a date is. And it doesn't have to be wining and dining and spending a lot of money, because ultimately the goal of a date is to get to know someone and to decide and to find out and to discover whether or not they're a good match for you. And there are lots of cost-effective ways you can do that without compromising on quality as well.
Yeah, and slightly going off tangent, but I completely agree with what you said in terms of finances and speaking to someone to understand their values, because, like, there's a stat out there, like, financial stress is, like, the biggest reason for divorce. So what do you think about, like, financial transparency with your partner? Like, how early do you get onto it in a date? Like, do you ask them what their salary is? Do you ask them what's in their bank account? Like, how do you get to that?
Well, do you know what? That is it's a really tricky conversation to have, especially at our society. We are really shy about talking about money. It's seen as vulgar or crass, and we all tend to shy away from it. However, if you are embarking on a serious relationship, for example, you've been dating someone, say you've gone on half a dozen dates, you really like this person, and you've decided, you know, to be exclusive. This is probably the time where you have to have a few heavier conversations, such as what do you constitute as cheating? What are you looking for? What can I offer you? And finances come under that umbrella of the heavier conversations. So you don't need to know the exact number of zeros in their bank account, but you do need to know, what do you consider to be extravagant, so that you can then judge, you know, well, I clearly earn quite a lot more than this person, because they're saying like a chippy tea on a Friday night is a big extravagance, whereas you might have takeaways 3 or 4 times a week. So it's about asking the right sort of questions to ascertain the answers that you want to find out.
It's really interesting you said that money as well is like a bit of a taboo, and I probably think it's like not the ideal first date topic. So more generally, what kind of top tips would you give for a first date?
Oh my goodness, have fun. Like, talk about whatever makes you feel good, whatever makes you laugh, and definitely make sure that the conversation kind of, I mean, I am not one to talk. On my first date, we talked about like funeral plans with my husband. We talked about death, and it got
listen, whatever works, whatever works.
Ebbs and flows of conversation. So, I mean, you can definitely have heavier moments, but for the most part, it should be fun. It's about getting to know whether or not you actually vibe with someone, whether you get on with them, whether they're going to fit into your life and be friends with your friends and love your family like you do. So definitely keep things light. And also, it's very important to find out if the other person is into Love Island or not.
Red flag. No, yeah, speaking of Love Island, it's just started. Like, the summer season has just begun. We already had Cynthia on, who was on the winter season. And obviously, you are the official Love Island flirt expert. So are you excited it's on? And give us like your top tips for the Islanders.
Oh my goodness. So I basically work from home the majority of the time. So Love Island is the highlight of my, it's the highlight of my summer and the highlight of my winter, which either makes me sound super cool or really sad. I'll let you decide. So for the Islanders, I think to start with, firstly, they're all in such a fortunate position for so many reasons. They've got the beautiful weather. They've got the opportunity to make so many amazing new friends and to potentially find the love of their lifetime. And the great thing about Love Island is the fact that every single person in that villa has gone in there full transparency. They are single and ready to find someone. And you just don't get that level of transparency in the regular dating world. Like, it's very, very vague and can be very muddy. So Love Islanders have this amazing opportunity where they can just look around and know that every single person that they find attractive or have a connection with, they're single. It takes away that kind of guesswork. So they're already kind of starting the race 10 steps ahead.
That is so true. Like, the amount of dates I've been on when it's like, what are your intentions? What do you want? Like, and you just don't know. Like, sometimes you never get a clear answer. Like, have you experienced that in your recent dates?
Well, it's really weird because you want to be light, you want to be fun, but then you also want to get to the nitty gritty and just find out. You don't want to waste time. You want to kind of just see if they're the right person.
Are you looking for marriage?
But then it's just a subtle way of saying that, right? So yeah. Like the whole Annabelle, what you said about, you know, oh, so what do you do on a Friday night? What takeaway? Like, just subtle ways. Like,
I'm okay, just, if they're getting efficient. When are you getting on one knee?
There you go. But then if they respond to that, they're just as bold as you. So fair enough.
Like, no, I completely agree. I mean, bringing it back to Love Island, Annabelle, what have you thought of the series so far? Obviously, it's been on a week now, but love to get your opinion on it.
Oh my goodness. So far, I am really enjoying it, but I fall into the same trap every single year where I look at the Islanders and I immediately go, not a patch on last season. These people are terrible. Fast forward a week and I will literally go to battle for any single one of them. I'm in love with Molly. I cannot hide it. I think she is fantastic. I think she's loads of fun, really genuine, and kind of, she wears her heart on her sleeve. Like, she doesn't have any falsities or kind of quirks to her that make you think, oh, perhaps she's in it for different reasons. She just seems very honest and very genuine. And I am very much looking forward to watching her journey in the villa. And then I think I just have a real soft spot for Andre. I just like can't wait to see, you know, what happens for him. And I'm really hoping he gets to, you know, stay in there for a lot longer.
There's always that one guy, right? The Mr. Nice guy that everyone roots for. And they do sometimes, you know, at the end, get their dream girl.
Yeah, so, let's hope so.
Annabelle, I wanted to ask you, so now in our culture, generally, we're not that, you know, these deep questions, but generally we kind of, it's all kind of superficial because we don't really open up to our parents about dating. Well, for me anyway, until like, you know, it gets certain down the line. And then until you're kind of committing to kind of, we're going to get married, and then you start introducing to the family. But I heard of this thing, and we don't do it in our culture. It's premarital counselling. And it just blew my mind. And
what?
I was like, honestly, there are, you know, all the questions that we just kind of talked about earlier, like, okay, what would you do if your mother-in-law done this? Or, and it's so like, and it's, I was talking to my friends from different cultures, and they were like, in like their church, they have to go through that to kind of commit.
That's so interesting.
But what's your take on that? Do you kind of advise that? You know, if you're a bit like kind of down the line in a relationship, you're about to kind of go serious. What's your kind of take on premarital counselling and just getting them questions out the way?
I think that there's never a bad time to have a little bit of TLC and a little bit of kind of professional guidance when it comes to relationships, because our country, no matter like how you identify, who you go to bed with, what religion you are, where you're from in the UK, our sex education is getting better, but it is still horribly lacking. And but because we don't really talk about sex, we don't educate ourselves about sex from a young age, we're also missing out on key educational points about relationships, like how to have them, how to communicate, what to expect, a boundary setting, mental load, and taking that away from your partner instead of adding to. We don't talk about this and we don't learn about it. And then all of a sudden we reach kind of our teenage years or our early 20s and we start looking for a partner, and then we have no idea how to be in a relationship. So I do think that there's definitely a place for premarital counselling or just relationship counselling in general. I think that's a really great way to future-proof your relationship and ensure your and your partner's future happiness and the success of your relationship.
Also, just on that, like, when do you think it is a kind of ideal time, say you're in a relationship, to bring in the family, bring in the friends? Because we do it quite late on.
Yes. I don't know. Well, that's also because our families have like 50 people in them. So to do it, it's a big deal.
Oh, they're coming around. They're meeting the whole brigade. Yeah. It's not just one or two. But what, like, is there a certain set time, or is it just kind of as you feel in a relationship? What's your kind of advice on that?
It's definitely the latter. It is completely independent and unique to every single, I mean, you may in your lifetime have two or three serious partners that meet your family, and that timescale will change depending on that person. I would say, though, that the milestone you are looking for is when you're starting to think about sharing your life with that person, when you're starting to think about moving in. That is definitely the milestone where that person needs to meet your family, integrate with your friends, and you need to be able to see them as part of your entire life, not just your romantic life.
And on that, I suppose, I'm just getting all the questions out of the way. I'm getting a proper therapy session. This is it's brilliant. But obviously, we don't, Tamvi, I think it's probably the same for you. We don't really generally tend to move in with partners before. I think it's changing now.
It's changing, but also like the wider family would be like, oh my God, they're living together and they're not married.
And it's like generally a taboo. So there's a lot of taboo things, like you said, talking about sex with your parents and, you know, doing that conversation and even talking about just loads of stuff like that. There is a lot of taboos when it comes to dating. So, you know, moving in. Would you advise that? Because they say you don't get to know someone until you live with them, right?
Get to know them, yeah.
What would you... Yeah.
I recommend sharing a space, an intimate space with someone before you, you know, financially, legally, emotionally and romantically commit to them through marriage. They do say you don't know someone until you've lived with them. But this, you kind of have to see it as more of a test drive. Like, you wouldn't go and spend an extraordinary amount of money on a car without taking it for a spin first and seeing if you like how it feels. And I know that's probably simplifying the process a lot, but that's the best example I can think of off the top of my head. Because you change how you are when you share an intimate space with someone. You have to learn how to compromise and vice versa. And relationships are largely about compromise. They're about coexisting and they're about teamwork. And marriage is such a massive test, whether you've been living with someone for, you know, a year or a decade. getting married does change things. It changes your approach to your partner, and it changes things in your, like, you are more bound emotionally, but also in from a legal sense as well. You can't just move out. So definitely trialing, like having a trial period before committing to marriage, is something I would recommend. It is not like a conceivable idea for a lot of people, and that is completely fine, but you have to find a way to coexist in some capacity. And that might mean, you know, taking a trip together, or, you know, finding little loopholes or ways around it so that you can spend concentrated periods of time together where, you know, someone has to do the washing up or someone has to do like menial chores.
It's everyday life, right? Everyday life. Yeah.
Well, yeah, look, yeah, you have to experience a little bit of everyday life together.
Can we employ you to kind of break that to our parents? Like, yeah. Listen, they want to move in together, right? So
I'll do the pitch. Yeah, yeah. A month-long trip somewhere beautiful.
I love that. Listen, thank you so much for coming on. I've actually learned a lot.
I've learned so much. Like, I feel like I'm going to go home and give my mum a lecture.
But what's next for you? What's coming up?
Oh my goodness, I'm going to make a cup of tea. That's
yeah, there you go.
My
beautiful
future.
All right, brilliant.
So it'll be a lot of Love Island for the next few weeks. A lot of writing about the Islanders, talking about the Islanders, and keeping my fingers crossed for them as well.
I can't wait to hear all about it.
Thank you so much for your time, Annabelle.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
That was interesting. I really enjoyed that.
I honestly feel educated as a woman.
There you go. I feel educated as a man. Yeah,
that was really helpful.
And we've got someone to, you know, break it to our parents.
I know. Really, at least I can be like, look, I didn't say this, and a relationship coach said it, so you actually have to listen to them.
Yeah, they've got another.
Yeah, they've got a title to them, okay?
And the Indians love titles.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to use it to your advantage.
Right, we're on to our last segment of the show. The agony aunt. I'm going to say agony aunt and uncle.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I feel
you're
like,
an uncle, yeah. I'm an aunt.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is the part of the program where we answer your questions about the topics we have covered this week. You can get in touch by emailing cultureclash@foobarradio.com or by tweeting us at foobarradio. So this week, Tom has got in touch, and bear in mind this is all about dating, and asked, he said, I'm 19 and my parents are super strict about me dating. I've started seeing a girl in secret and I really like her. How do I go about telling them about her? Right, Tom, I'm 33 and I'm still trying to figure that one out. Like,
listen, as an Indian girl, I could not relate to this more, okay? Like, having to sneak out your house, having to tell them to park down the road, having to hope that no auntie runs into you in the shopping centre when you're on your first date.
Like, that's the worst.
I understand the stress, okay? The first thing I would say is, ultimately, your parents want you to be happy and your parents don't want you to die alone and stay single forever. So I feel like the earlier you can tell them you're dating and the earlier you can have like an open line of communication, not necessarily like I've got a girlfriend, but like I am dating, whether it's early stages or you're getting to know lots of different people, being able to have that conversation will make you feel so liberated, and having to not kind of lie to your parents and sneak about makes the whole thing so much more enjoyable and easy, and dating should be fun.
It should be fun. And the fact that you said you really like her, so obviously I think hopefully that feeling's reciprocated. And I think you both need to have that conversation about when you're both telling your parents, you know, if she's done it, and then it makes it more of a journey together. You're both telling your parents, you're both dealing with any potential repercussions, or hopefully good, that they're supportive. And also play it down. It's not, you know, you're still in, it seems like early stages. You said you're dating.
And he's only 19.
Yeah.
You're so young and you've got so much of life ahead of you. Like, you don't know if this works out. I hope it does. But also, like, you have so much to learn and grow with this person that, like, don't put so much pressure on yourself.
Just have fun. And also, you'll be really surprised about your parents' response. They might be like, oh good, finally.
Yeah, I was getting worried. But also, I always say, like, when you're dating someone, you're also dating their family. So I think it's important to, like, get to know your person's parents and siblings, because, like, imagine if you hate them. It's good to know that sooner rather than later. So I also think, like, when you're dating someone, you should also try and get to know their family and, yeah, like you said, integrate your lives together.
I mean, what is it about, so say your partner's other side, right, your family, what was the one person you'll be kind of scared of, like
mother-in-law?
Is it
100% the mother-in-law? Because
not the sister-in-law.
No, I don't know. I think with a mother-in-law, especially in like South Asian families, there's like this whole stigma around the mother-in-law, like being mean to the daughter-in-law. I think also a lot of like men in the South Asian family, not to generalize, but have been like mollycoddled by their mother, and they're such mummy's boys, so they're so protective over their sons, and they have such a tight bond that you're scared, you're going in and you're like threatening that relationship. So I think that's the person I'd be the most scared of. What about you?
So father-in-law.
No. Well, yeah, my dad is bloody scary, so good luck to my future husband.
it's the word, you're like, oh, what do you, the handshake, the everything from the handshake to the football team to,
oh yeah, yeah, do you that know is what a mean? Big deal.
And then, it is, you know, if you're like Man U and they're Arsenal, it's, you know,
yeah,
chaos.
That's a clash.
So it's just little stuff, and you're like, okay, what do you get them and what do you talk about? And it's a lot that goes through your head, but then it's always more built up than it actually is.
Yeah, it's never really that scary in reality, and also it gets easier. Like the first meeting might be terrifying, but it gets easier each time, I promise.
That's a wrap for our first showtime.
I know,
maybe.
It's
that's...
gone so quickly, but honestly, I feel like I've learned so much about dating.
No, I've got my little notebook ready. I'm going to attack Hinge in a new fresh term of mine. I'm going to attack Love Island in a new perspective, right?
Yeah, I know. We've had some incredible guests on. Thank you so much to Cynthia and Annabelle for their insight and their wise words. It's been so insightful to us, but also hopefully to everyone listening today.
Yeah, 100%. And look, we've got plenty more coming from the Culturecast series. We'll be talking different topics each week. So let us know what topics you want us to discuss as well. And obviously, any questions for our Agony Aunt and Uncle segment, you can email at cultureclash@fubarradio.com or tweet us @FubarRadio. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.